The following is general advice only and should not be construed as accounting, legal, or any other professional advice. The details of your situation are fact-dependent, and you are advised to seek the help of a competent professional. Yes, 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 friends, we are back. Welcome to CPA Reviewed, the official podcast of another71.com. I am your humble host, Jeff Elliott, and we make the CPA exam far, far more exciting than it should be. Welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, September 6th, 2012. And so what's on everyone's mind right now, does Labor Day affect the release of CPA exam scores? And the short and quick answer is, I don't know. Now, originally, when the AICPA and NASBA first put out their dates, I believe they said September 10th. Well, according to my calendar, when they say September 10th, that means September 7th. And that's the methodology, and that because September 10th was a Monday. And that's the methodology that I followed all year, and have not been wrong so far. So I'm batting 1,000. What people have been asking about Labor Day, well, I don't know if it's because they read my site or people are asking, but NASBA then came out and said that the score release date was actually going to be September 11th. So does that mean that they say September 11th, but they really still mean September 10th? Or do they really mean September 11th? I don't know. So, the scores could come out the 7th or the 10th. No one really knows except for the people who hit go on the score release button. So, there you have it. My gut feeling is that it will be the 10th instead of the 7th. But who knows? So, I hope that clears that up. All right, well, for today's show, I want to do something different. And if it's good enough, maybe we'll stick to this format in the future. But instead of me reading people's questions or whatever, I decided it might make for a better show if people could call in and ask the questions themselves versus them writing and me reading them. So the podcast hotline, the Ninja Hotline, is area code 323-834-9132. That's area code 323-834-9132. Now, if you call that number, you will get a voicemail and you can leave your question or comment and it will appear in a future edition of the podcast. And the people who do call in, whose questions make it to the podcast, since it's new, there weren't as many. If it grows, there might be a ton. But someone in the podcast is going to win a Ninja Wiley 10-point combo, which is worth $250. It's got the Ninja Audio, Ninja Notes, Ninja Flashcards, and the Wiley Test Bank of a section of your choice. So someone on the podcast today will win the 10-point combo. Again, that number is 323-834-9132. And just say your name and your question. Please don't give a callback number because I have to edit that out. So, all right. Well, let's get started with the show. Michael is up first.
My question is, if you were to advise a CPA candidate who's just starting out, what would your overall advice be regarding everything from study materials to use, study habits, reasonable time expectations for each exam and overall time horizon, bad study habits to avoid, the proper order or suggested order of exams, and if good advice for someone in the event of a failure on the exam?
All right, some excellent questions. Well, first, study materials. There's several different CPA review courses, and they all have advertised pass rates that are all about the same. So it comes down to what is your budget? I mean, should you go into debt for a CPA review course? That's up to you. But how much do you want to spend? Do you want to spend $1,500? Do you want to spend Well, gosh, it's not even that much. There's some, I think, that are under $1,000. You want to spend $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 and above. Also, what is your learning style? Do you want to watch an instructor that's standing in front of a dry erase board? Do you want to watch a PowerPoint style with voiceover? Do you want to watch kind of a hybrid with some highlighting? There's several different course formats. Are you an auditory learner? So there's some audio courses out there. So what is your learning style? What is your budget? What is your learning style? The key thing to do is to ask other candidates what they think about a review course before you purchase it. And you can do that on the another71.com forum. But more importantly, because different people have different writing styles, different family situations, different budgets, if you spend $3,000, if you spend, let's say you have an extra $3,000 laying around, we all have an extra $3,000 laying around, right? Let's say you have $3,000. Well, if you buy a $3,000 course, you have $0 to do something else with it. If you buy a $1,000 course, you can go on a nice family vacation and buy an iPad to take with it. So there's an opportunity cost. If you buy a $1,500 course, you have $1,500 to spend on other things. So opportunity cost plays a key factor in there. So, but most importantly, watch the demos. Before you drop a mortgage payment on your review course, watch the demos so that you know what you buy. Because I don't think any review course will let you return the materials. As a matter of fact, I am the only one out there who, and since they're digital goods, you can totally scam me, and people do, and that's fine. But sometimes it gets on my nerves, and sometimes it doesn't. I have an extremely low refund rate though. So make sure you watch the demos. To your second question, what are good habits? Good habits are following the L study plan, ELL, which stands for early, lunch, late. You need to be studying 20 to 25 hours a week. If you don't, you're not really studying. The caveat there is that busy season might come into play. So maybe 20 to 25 hours a week during busy season is just not reality, which is why a lot of people take the exam in the second, third, and fourth quarters versus the first quarter of the year. Pass rates are also traditionally higher. So go to another71.com, get their free study planner, and good study habits are, getting up early, studying over lunch, studying at nighttime, taking it seriously. Bad study habits are starting your CPA review lectures and having your Gmail account in one tab, Facebook in another, ESPN.com in another. So you watch Bonds for 5 minutes, and yeah, you're pretty bored. So you leave it going, but you minimize the window, and you're clicking around managing your fantasy football team or whatever, or you're on Pinterest. I could say I've been on Pinterest one time just to see what in the heck it was, and I was like, what? So I know, I think statistically, Pinterest is like 70 to 75 to 80% female. Or so I've heard. And it's a lot of cooking recipes around there. So I've seen some other people in the CPA exam space trying to be ahead of the curve and start Pinterest pages. Good luck with that. I won't be following you there. But don't start season one of Breaking Bad on Netflix streaming while you're studying for FAR. Don't do that. So order of the exams, I would take financial first just to get it out of the way. It's traditionally the hardest exam. My voice crackling, I'm 13. I'm a few years removed from 13. I would try to knock out auditing in 2012 or early 2013 because, mid 2013, there's some changes to the statements on auditing standards. So just get those out of the way And if you're going to take two exams in a one window, I would pair it with BEC. I would pair your other exam with BEC, but don't take BEC for granted. I recently did an Ask the Ninjas article basically saying the same thing. And then finally, rebounding from failure, you have to ask yourself, how hard are you studying? Are you studying 60% effort or 110%? Yeah, you failed. Is it your review course's fault? Probably not. Maybe. You know, maybe your review course just sucks. Okay? buyer's remorse. It happens. Or, you know, that's not even a fair statement, because people do pass with that particular review course. It just sucks for you. So it's not your... and I probably shouldn't say that word, because I know that some moms listen to the podcast in the car with their kids. And mommy, what does mean? Sorry. So how hard are you studying? Is your review course the right review course for you? Let's hope and say yes, because you don't need to spend more money. So if it is for you, maybe you're not studying right with it. Maybe you're not studying, you know, maybe you're not taking killer notes. You're not studying the Ninja framework, the NINJA. There's more info on my site about that. And if you rebound, and marketing alert, if you need to add some more points to your score, the Ninja notes, the Ninja audio, the Wiley test bank, statistically, they add an average of 10 points to people's exam scores who use the same primary review course, and then retook it, and they added an average of 10 points per score. And the haters are well, the population was 1,200 candidates, and it is what it is. So I was happy to see that. So that's my advice. The key to rebounding from failure, I think, to sum it up, is don't blame others, blame yourself. All right, next question is from Jordan.
Hi, Jeff. My name is Jordan, and my question is, what is your advice on how to recover mentally after failing consecutive exams? I started in May with the mindset that I would be able to get through all of them this summer, but I've actually failed 3 in a row now, so it's kind of safe to say that mindset is gone. So again, how can I recover mentally and have that initial mindset that I can get through this and do the CPA exam? Thanks.
Well, that's a great follow-up to Michael's question, because Michael's question dealt with kind of rebounding from failure as far as, you know, logistically, how do you do it? But Jordan's question pertains more to the mindset, and particularly when you fail 3 exam sections in a row. I was in the same boat. I scored 3 straight 71s on BEC, and hence the domain another71.com was born. So yeah, my website was founded in failure. You know, passing the CPA exam can be one of the most depressing things in the world, because your family starts to think you're just not capable. Your boss starts to wonder if maybe hiring, or actually, this is probably not reality, but this is your perception. Your boss starting to wonder, your coworkers might not even be an accountant. They might not even be eligible to take the CPA exam, but they see you study and you have your books. And, you know, let's face it, it's kind of cool letting people know that you're studying for the CPA exam. You know, you're kind of putting them on notice that you're going to be a CPA, and you got your books, and like, oh, wow. He's a real go-getter. She's a real go-getter. and then they know that you take time off work to go take the exam, and hey, how'd you do? You know, oh, I don't know. I don't get my score back for another 8 weeks. What? They do that? Yeah, it's crazy. Blah, 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 blah. And so then you do get your score back and you fail, but you don't tell anyone. And then eventually they're like, hey, did you ever get your score? Like, yeah, you know, I just kind of didn't pass. well, better luck next time. You'll get it. Well, that's fine the first couple of times it happens, and then it's like deja vu all over again. And how do you rebound from failure mentally? You have to mentally hit the reset button. You have to treat, like, let's say it's BEC. So you have to treat BEC like you haven't studied for it before, because there's a temptation to cut corners. Like, okay, I know economics, you know. My score report said I scored stronger than the average candidate. Well, guess what? You're not exam ready for economics today. So don't take economics for granted, even though you feel strong. So start from scratch with your review course. Start over. Yes. Take notes again. I highly recommend that you just start fresh with a legal pad and start taking notes again. Really work a ton of questions. And when you hit reset mentally, okay, I'm going back, I'm going to study for it again the right way, I'm not going to cut any corners, like, don't dwell in the past. Don't look, your past exams, the past money you spent, the emotions, those are sunk costs. You can't get those back. So don't carry that around, because those are emotions and finances, and that's time that's spent. It's in the past. I'm using a lot of cliches. Wipe the slate clean. If I was an athlete, I'd say, yeah, I'll get on the same page. If you have a spouse, if you have a girlfriend, sit down with them and say, hey, man, I really want to start clean. I really need your support. I want you to know I'm giving it my all. Don't just roll in there and give it the old college try again. Like, those days are done. So forget that you failed. Actually, learn from your failure, in the sense that, yeah, I did this wrong. I was lazy. I played too much Madden. I went out too much. I drank too much. I didn't make it a priority. I didn't study on weekends like I said I would. I said yes to too many road trips. I said yes to going on the road when I had the choice of staying back in the office, when, even though it's more boring, all of that. So hit the reset button. I hope that helps. Next up is Teddy. He has a question about the ethics exam.
I have a question concerning the ethics exams. I know of people who have taken an exam and, by stroke of being unlucky, have failed it once or twice. But what happens if you fail it three times? You know, you are just the unlucky one and you have failed three times. Does that mean you have to reset the entire CPA exam?
Great question. Well, first of all, I don't, and again, this pertains to the ethics exam, which a lot of states require some sort of ethics requirement. Many states require the AICPA ethics. I don't think struggling with the ethics exam has anything to do with luck or anything like that. I distinctly remember sitting in an empty office during Thanksgiving holiday. So this must have been Thanksgiving, would have been 2008. I had passed. I want to get the ethics requirement out of the way. You know what? I went through so I'm sitting there in an empty office. Everyone else is, out shopping. Of course, I wouldn't want to go shopping on Black Friday, but, everyone else was doing fun stuff, watching football, whatever. I was in my office going through the ethics requirement. I got all the way through and I scored, I believe, like an 89 or an 88. And I went all the way through each answer again. And this process took a good 6 hours, but I busted my tail, and then I held my breath as I hit submit and I scored a 92. So it's not, I would say, I would politely say it's not luck. It's you have to go through those questions one by one by one and play out each question, because some of those questions are subjective. And so, what's the best answer? Now, as far as failing it three times, when I took the ethics exam, if you hit submit three times and it didn't go through, I think you had to send in the paper copy. And so, do you have to take the CPA exam over? No. But you have to check with the ethics material. You might have to like buy it again. It kind of depends on your state, I guess. But long story short, you have to keep taking it and submitting it. And there might be different rules as to how many times they will let you electronically submit it. So that's kind of just general information. I would read the fine print or call your state. You know what I would do? I would call your state board of accountancy and ask for the executive director. That's what they're there for. Make them earn their money and ask them, tell them your situation and ask them what you should do next. Next up is Tara. And that sound can only mean one thing. That was the ninjas appearing out of the floor, destroying everything in sight with their 10-point combo. Tara is the winner of the Ninja Wily 10-point combo. That was a little over the top. Congrats, Tara. Email me, jeff@another71.com. And you get a section of Ninja Notes, Ninja Audio, Ninja Flashcards, and the Wily Test Bank of your choice. That's worth $250. If you want the Ninja 10-point combo, you can go to another71.com. And it's called the 10-point combo because people who supplement with the Ninja products and Wily after a failed exam, on average, add 10 points to their score. And the overall pass rate across the entire population, everyone who used Ninja or Wily as a supplement, pass, fail, or otherwise, the pass rate was 75%. So congrats to Tara. And here is her question.
And I just wanted to call and ask, what was the best advice that you can give someone to be motivated to do the CPA exam when they are not required to actually have it in their current position? I know that you have a lot of ways to keep on task with taking it, but what best advice can you give to stay motivated to take it? Thank you.
Yeah, that's tough. Staying motivated to take the CPA exam when it feels like people don't even really care because no one in your office is a CPA. It's not a job requirement. And that's a situation that I found myself in my job prior to passing the exam. It was one that I had when I passed the exam and then I quit and did another71.com full time. So I worked in a regulatory environment, did a lot of compliance work. Now, having CPA after my name looked good for credibility wise, as far as like writing testimony for a case that we were doing. But from an internal perspective, like I said, it wasn't required. They wouldn't reimburse me for expenses. Got a little snarkiness from one of the older people in my department, but I think they were snarky because I didn't report to them. I reported to the director, and they were a manager, and I think they felt like I should be reporting to them. But that's beside the point. So how do you stay motivated? Well, keep in mind that your current job, I mean, people change jobs, what, every couple of years? You know, the days of being a company man and staying with a company for 30 years, 35 years, getting the silver watch and retiring and whatever, those days are gone. So people jump ship all the time. So while your current job might not require it, who knows, your company might get bought out. And so you find your job in jeopardy. You lose your job. So you have to hit the job market. If your resume doesn't say CPA, you're at a distinct disadvantage in, quote, this economy. And in any economy, if you're vying for a a financial analyst position at a publicly traded company, and you know, trying to work in the finance department and accounting department. If the person that you're going up against has a CPA designation, guess what? You had better really have the X factor, like you're super nice. People just gel with you, whatever, and then you promise to take the CPA exam or something. But chances are, unless you just have killer relevant experience, they're going to hire the CPA. It's just, you know, that's just the stigma of being a CPA. I mean, like it or not. So let that motivate you. For me, yeah, it was like a career deal. You know, that's nice to have and everything. But for me, it was more I started it and I wasn't going to let the AICPA beat me. So I didn't even really want to be a CPA at one point. But, you know, because I wasn't in public accounting, I didn't do tax returns, I didn't, you know. I used to work in public accounting, but I didn't anymore. Wasn't relevant. I mean, it was relevant to my job, but it wasn't a requirement. So how do you keep going? Especially after back-to-back 74s on regulation, which cost me my financial credit. So I could have quit, but that would have always bothered me. And so maybe your motivation is internal. Like, who cares what everyone thinks? Who cares about what people around the office are saying? Maybe you want to pass the CPA exam just because it's just an accomplishment that you want to have. It's kind of like running a marathon. Some people just want to run a marathon. No one's telling them they have to. You know, their doctor isn't saying you start running or you're going to die. It's just something they want to do. And so you start, you want to finish it. And so, you know, if you can't find motivation at work or whatever, just do it for yourself and let that be your motivating factor. Because I wrote an article on this one time. Yeah, you pass the exam and, you know, you work your butt off and you go back to work and you have your certificate, you know, it's all framed. Guess what? They don't throw you a parade. There is no, hey, you passed the CPA exam parade. People maybe nod like, oh, hey, congrats. That's it. You spent 500 hours, a couple thousand bucks. And people are like, oh, hey, that's cool. Nice frame. You're lucky if they take you out to lunch. Okay? So if you do it for to satisfy others or to impress others, you'll be sadly disappointed. If you do it for yourself, no one can ever take that accomplishment away from you unless you do something stupid like embezzle. Don't do that. So let that be your motivation, Tara. Next up is Linda.
Hi, Jeff. This is Linda. I have a question / comment, and hopefully you can discuss on your next podcast. I'm studying for the BEC, and I'm having a lot of difficulty understanding operational financial leverage. Basically, the formula is giving me, I understand that the degree of leverage, operating leverage, is percent change in EBIT divided by percent change in sales, but and of course the financial leverage and the total leverage, but getting everything confused, so I was hoping that you could maybe put together some sort of summary or provide me with some sort of feedback that will help me remember which order goes with which. Like for example, degree of leverage is going to be the percent change in EBIT divided by percent change in sales, and of course degree of financial leverage. And I'm looking at my notes, of course. I wouldn't be able to recite this off the top of my head. But degree of leverage is a percent change in EPS divided by percent change in EBIT, and then with combined leverage, you multiply the two. But is there an easier way to know this so that I can go in on test day and basically get all the questions that they ask me, right?
Thanks, Linda. Great question. Well, first of all, let me say that I do not have this formula included in the BEC Ninja Notes. And the reason for that is, you know, there's a million different formulas under the sun that you can memorize for the exam, but there's a ton of stuff to know. And so really there's just some key base formulas that I recommend that you know, because otherwise you can just spend weeks just memorizing just formulas and just majoring on the minors there. So could you see this on exam day? Yes. Do I recommend that you memorize this? Not necessarily. But since you asked the question, how do you memorize the relationship between operating leverage, financing leverage, and then the combined leverage? And so there's some moving parts here. And what I recommend is to memorize the combined leverage formula, which is percentage change in EPS, earnings per share, divided by percentage change in sales. So, you know, change in EPS over change in sales. EPS over sales is the degree of combined leverage. Now, what about the other two? Well, if you look at the formulas, if you write out the formula for operating leverage and for financial leverage, operating leverage is percentage change in EBIT divided by percentage change in sales. Write that down. Change in EBIT over change in sales. That's operating leverage. Now, the degree of financial leverage is percentage change in EPS, earnings per share, over percentage change in EBIT. Okay, percentage change in EPS over divided by percentage change in EBIT. Now, the combined, to get the combined formula, or the combined number, you actually multiply those two. So what happens when you multiply those two fractions? Well, for operating leverage, EBIT is in the numerator. For financial leverage, EBIT is in the denominator. So they cancel each other out, leaving you with change in EPS over change in sales. Again, operating is change in EBIT over change in sales. Financial is change in EPS over change in EBIT. Combined, change in EPS over change in sales. So, if you know the combined leverage formula, change in EPS over percentage, so percentage change in EPS over percentage change in sales, all you have to memorize is where does EBIT go? For operating, EBIT goes on top. For financial, EBIT goes on the bottom. So if you know the combined is percentage change in EPS over percentage change in sales, you just plug in EBIT to the top for operating. So it's percentage change in EBIT over percentage change in sales. Well, for financial, you take your combined. Again, I'm trying to keep this straightforward here. Again, for the combined formula is EPS over sales. So for financial leverage, you know that EBIT goes on the bottom. So you take out sales and plug in EBIT on the bottom. So instead of EPS over sales, it's now EPS over EBIT. For financial, instead of EPS over sales, it's EBIT over sales. Remember, operating, that's where a company makes its money. So EBIT is on the top floor because that's the most, you know, EBIT is on the top floor. That's where they make their money. Financing, you know, those are like, you know, the accountants, the financial people. Those people are not bringing money to the bottom line. Those are, so they stick those in the basement. So the people that are making the money, the operating, they stick those on the top floor. That's where EBIT goes. EBIT over sales. The financing people, the accounting, the lawyers, whatever, they're not making any money. They're a drain on the company. They stick those people in the basement. EBIT's on the bottom. So, again, financial is EPS over EBIT. Operating is EBIT over sales because, again, EBIT's on top. EBIT's on the top floor. EBIT over sales. Financial, those financial people are in the basement, so it's EPS over EBIT, and the combined is EPS over sales, and then plug in the numbers. So memorize the combined formula and then know where EBIT goes. Operating, hey, they're on the top floor. It goes on top. Financing, financial, EBIT, they're in the basement. It goes on bottom. I hope that's helpful. All right, well, that does it all for this edition of CPA Reviewed. I hope this has been helpful. It's a new format. I enjoyed it. And maybe, well, I know that we will do it again because I have a couple more questions I could not get to today. They will appear on the next podcast. That's Mordecai, John, and Megan. You will appear in the next podcast, and you'll be eligible for the next 10-point combo. Hi-ya! I just wanted to do that. So, call me. I almost said call me, maybe. 323-834-9132. 323-834-9132. Leave me a message or go to another71.com. Click in the upper right-hand corner. Ask Jeff. You can just email me a question. And it'll either appear in another podcast or I will answer it in another edition of Ask the Ninjas. Have a great day, everyone, and I will talk to you soon.